It's March 19th, 2014, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Rano Zhao, and we cover the Geek Beat here on Hawaii Public Radio.
First, we'll look at the latest tech news and happenings in Hawaii and beyond. And joining us today is Liz Shigeta to tell us about the upcoming Hawaii RoboFest.
Finally, we will talk about new developments and future plans for the High Tech Development Corporation. We'd, of course, love your questions and comments as part of the conversation, so please be ready to call in or tweet us. But first, the headlines.
Well, Hawaii-based TrueTag Technologies has been named a finalist in the 2014 Edison Awards. The company created a nano-sized security platform that allows manufacturers of any stripe, from pharmaceutical companies to car companies, to authenticate their products and fight the global problem of counterfeit goods. The Edison Awards were established in 1987 by the American Marketing Association, but became an independent organization 5 years ago. Vetted by over 3,000 professionals in a variety of fields, the awards honor innovation in products and business leaders. Past winners include Apple, Sony, Nike, 3M, and Disney.
TrueTag Technologies was spun off by Sky Ventures, founded by inventor and entrepreneur Hank Wu. The company recently consolidated its operations at a new headquarters in Kapolei. It houses over a dozen employees and a 3,500-square-foot manufacturing facility. The namesake products are micro-tags, or dust-sized particles that are smaller than the width of a human hair. TrueTags are cheap, heat-resistant, inert, and even edible. They can be mixed and integrated into almost any product. And unlike packaging and labels, they can't be removed or faked. TrueTags can carry millions of unique optical patterns and thus allow everyone along a supply chain to verify that a product is the real deal.
Well, the company estimates that counterfeit products are responsible for trillions of dollars in losses worldwide and bring a whole host of problems ranging from safety to liability to irreversible brand damage. The Edison Awards are named for famed inventor Thomas Edison, who held over 1,000 U.S. patents. There are more than 40 categories, from computing systems and software to entertainment, beauty, and personal wellness. TrueTag is a finalist in the nanomaterials category under material science. Along with two other companies, the winners will be announced next month in San Francisco. Now, you know, we may be talking about TrueTag, and we've talked about them several times over the course of the last, I think at least 6 months to a year, because they were recognized at the World Economic Forum for also, you know, being very innovative. And I think we made mention of that. But this one is coming from, you know, this American Marketing Association, and TrueTag is, you know, pretty cool to talk about. You know?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if it can be woven into clothes, it mm-hmm. can be in the paint, it can be, but their primary market is pharmaceuticals. And imagine that a nurse can not only check that the drugs that she's administering or he's administering is actually the right drug, but that you can track, you know, once it comes out of the bottle and it's blue and green and pink, how do you know after that which one is which? Mm-hmm, you know, so mm-hmm. there's a way that you can have a scanner and check that. In fact, there was just a story today that the problem with counterfeit drugs are not that they don't work necessarily, but a counterfeit drug is also dyed these colors because that's how they brand them. And the dyes used to achieve some of these fake colors for fake drugs are actually more harmful than absolutely nothing. So definitely a fun technology.
So, you know, yeah, it's kind of interesting because the, you know, TrueTag has also developed the scanning capability. Right. And so they, you know, they run the pills under the scanner mm-hmm. and they can identify them.
Invisible barcodes.
Yeah, that's right.
A student at the University of Hawaii is one of two plaintiffs in a new lawsuit filed against Google over its Gmail web-based email service, which powers email and other online services for hundreds of college campuses around the world. The lawsuit filed in California alleges that Google is violating state and federal wiretap laws, intruding on student privacy when it bulk scans email messages. There are eight other plaintiffs, but only one other student, and the intent is to achieve class action status on behalf of the 30 million users that Google says is using its Google Apps for Education platform.
Well, according to a report in Education Week, the suit may hinge on a 30-year-old law called FERPA, the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act. FERPA was last updated in 2001 and still shapes how schools manage and protect student records. Of course, the law predates every online service popular with today's students, including Gmail. In its response to the lawsuit, Google notes that it's that ads are turned off by default for Google Apps for Education users, and that all users consent to the scanning and indexing of emails for other purposes when they first sign in. But the lawsuit asserts that many campus users were not fully aware of the terms of use or were minors that could not legally consent.
The University of Hawaii's Information Technology Office signed a contract with Google in June 2010 to migrate to the Google system, moving over 60,000 student accounts from local mail services to Google over the following year. At the time, UH officials say that cost reductions were a major factor in making the switch, but also the additional features that are provided by Google. The education tech market is a big one, an $8 billion industry that's pursued by many large firms, including Google, Microsoft, and Apple. But the lawsuit, which seeks financial damages of $100 per day per user for over 2 years, could put a damper on those plans, as could a strict interpretation of the FERPA law in the age of cloud services and social media.
Now, I'm kind of wondering who really initiated this lawsuit. And, of course, they're now seeking sort of this class action mm-hmm. status. And obviously, they have to find a lot of people that want to join into this this suit. But, you know, it's also curious about how, you know, this one student from UH and another student from the University of Pacific, what are some of the supposed damages as a result
of the violation of their privacy and such. And Google, even in their response to the lawsuit, note that yes, their emails are scanned. Mm-hmm. They're not delivering ads, but the emails are still scanned. So the allegation is, are they still building a profile of these students, even though they're not being advertised against? And it is interesting to note that, you know, not all college students are 18 years. In fact, this Google Apps for Education is deployed at elementary and intermediate schools as well. So, I mean, I can see their concern, but mm-hmm. it is something that's provided for free to schools. So I can see the interest in schools to do it. And you get 25 gigs of space for your email. I remember when I was a UH student and their Unix system, you had to keep it under like 2 gigs or something like that, or all
two
of your
gigs.
Email would bounce. Or two megs.
Megs, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, that would be a fantasy world too. Finally, it's interesting to note that the judge in this case is Lucy Koh, mm-hmm. and she's also very well known for her rulings in the Apple versus Samsung cases as well. So.
Well, you know, coincidentally, there's a fairly big conference happening this coming Friday and Saturday over at Iolani. It's the Google Apps for Education sort of annual conference.
I hope there are some good questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, next up, Cardax Pharmaceutical, a Hawaii-based company developing and marketing nutritional supplements, became the 16th publicly traded company based in the islands with the completion of a reverse merger announced last month. On paper, Cardax was acquired by Coffee Corner Inc., a Houston-based shell company that was traded on the over-the-counter market. As part of the deal, Coffee Corner's sole director resigned, and the directors of Cardax were elected to serve on its board.
Cardax also applied to change the name of the company's former stock ticker from COFF, K-O-F-F, to CDXI. The over-the-counter stock spiked in value from less than $1 to more than $4 when the reverse merger was completed. Reverse mergers are an increasingly popular way to take a company public, avoiding the extensive preparation and regulatory hurdles that are required before an initial public offering. Separately, the company said that it has raised $11 million in equity funding, more than half of it since the beginning of this year.
Well, Cardax described itself as a development stage life science company and is focused on ataxanthin found in algae and described as an antioxidant. The company says that their product provides the anti-inflammatory benefits of steroids or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, but with less risk. Cardax incoming executive chairman, Nicholas Mitsukas said in a prepared statement, "We are very pleased to accomplish this milestone in our corporate development. We look forward to continuing to develop our nutraceutical and pharmaceutical technologies and commercialize our products." I got a chance to talk to David Watermo, who's the actually CEO and president of Cardax, and was asking him a little bit about this reverse merger. And the idea is that the Coffee Corner was a viable company at one point in time, but then they sort of, you know, slowly, you know, lost their market and was kind of going out of business, but they kept their public offering viable. So they're, you know, it was basically still recognized as a viable company, you know, as far as the SEC was concerned. So then they could orchestrate this merger. And basically, you know, as a result, the director resigned, and then the Cardax,
right,
guys took over, and then they basically changed the ticker signal or symbol to be CDXI.
Yeah, I like the idea. Yeah. You instead of going through everything you have to go through to get an IPO, mm-hmm. you find a company that's got a spot on the stock stock trading platform and say we'll take your spot if you don't need it anymore. But it used to be a coffee shop in Houston. Now it's Cardax Pharmaceuticals. I think that's pretty cool.
And then when they it's kind of a small stock right now, but in about a year, if they are obviously it'll still be viable, but then they qualify to become part of the NASDAQ. So they initially kind of when they initially went and became a public offering, they were up to about a little bit over 4, and then now they're probably hovering around 1.5.
A new study out of the University of Hawaii asserts that human population growth is a primary driver in the global declines of human welfare and biodiversity, and that scientific literature largely downplays and trivializes the looming risks of overpopulation. UH geography professor Camilo Mora, in a paper published last week in the journal Ecology and Society, looked at nearly 200 research articles, most of them published in the last 10 years. He concluded that there are no foreseeable pathways to avoid major crises without dealing with rising birth rates and declining death rates among both developed and developing nations.
Well, Mora notes that the average ideal family was 2.1 children, one to replace each parent, and the 0.1% to account for child mortality rates. Now, child mortality rates have dropped, and as children live longer, Mora concludes that the average family should only be one child. Obviously, the political and sociological ramifications of such a guideline are huge, as seen with China's controversial one-child policy. But unchecked growth is unsustainable, he says, citing former presidential candidate Mitt Romney and his 22 grandchildren. If each of Romney's descendants followed his path, and he and his wife would be responsible for adding 124 people to the population in just 4 generations.
The impact of population growth can be measured everywhere. The study notes, for example, that unintended pregnancies alone are responsible for $11 billion in public spending in the U.S. each year. On the global scale, Earth's population could double in the next 50 years while the planet's resources continue to dwindle. Mora concludes, quote, "In a planet with limited resources and a sensitive climate, with most of its natural resources being overexploited and its economic systems overstressed, meeting the additional demands of a growing human population without destroying the Earth and our social systems will be one of the greatest tests to humanity in the years to come."
Well, obviously this is a much more complex issue than, one study can reveal. But there was another study that was going on with the Harvard Business Review, and they noted a generational study. In 1992, 78% of the college graduates were asked if they would have kids, and 78% said they, 78% said they would have children.
Back then,
in 2012, that same sort of survey went out to students, and 42% said they would have children. So it's declining.
Well, and one of the main points, though, is that certainly in developing countries, you can see it's expensive to have children, et cetera, et cetera. You want to focus on your career, but when you're saying your objective, for example, is to eradicate poverty, if it's the poorer populations that don't have access to the education or to the contraceptives that they need, it's you're still going to have that issue. It's kind of, I did see coverage of this story elsewhere, and it's it is very dire prediction. Like, either we need less people or bad things are going to happen.
Well, okay. Well, now joining us here in the studio is Liz Shigeta, who's a teacher at Honowai, and she's here to tell us about the Hawaii RoboFest. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and aren't you glad that people are still having children?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Well, we have been sort of covering the robotics competitions and of course, enjoy things like FIRST Robotics and VEX and all the other ones. But this is the first time I'm hearing about the Hawaii RoboFest. Now, maybe I've been living under a rock, but how long has this been going on?
Well, for Hawaii, this is our 7th annual year, and we're happy to have RoboFest mainly because the first Lego League handles the first semester of the year, and we wanted a program where the robotics could be throughout the year. So RoboFest really is the second semester.
Mm-hmm. And so what constitute a RoboFest? I know that with some of the competitions, and even Bert and I have been able to be judges or at least participants, there's a task that's assigned at the beginning of the year. They build robots to accomplish them, and then they are thrown into a competitive ring. Is it the similar idea?
It's similar, but that's not the whole idea. Mm-hmm. For RoboFest, we wanted to open up more of the public participation. So students will participate as a team. And if they want to and if they choose to go through via the route of the tournaments, then we do have a similar task that they go through, normally environmentally based task, and they could do it that way. And they are pitting their bot against time. And how many points they get, how many tasks they're able to complete. But the other half of the RoboFest is an exhibition competition or an exhibition showcase where students get together and they think of ways, innovative ways, where robots can help people. Mm-hmm. And this year, the theme for Hawaii is Stranded in Paradise. So what happens when we have a disaster, whether it's man-made or whether it's natural? What if we have a energy crisis? How can the robot help us? And that is a way for exhibition for them to showcase their idea. And the robot has to be autonomous. So once you click a button or hit a switch, they have to operate on its own and do everything on its own.
So in that example, do they actually build something or do they perhaps do more of a study, a presentation?
Both. Huh? They do a presentation, but they also have to build the robot. And we don't say you have to use a certain platform. You can use any platform as long as you don't, you know, it's not a radio-controlled type of robot where you can manage it through, you know, other ways. But it has to be where once you program the robot goes on its own and does what it's supposed to do.
I kind of like that idea. I mean, some of these other programs, it's like you use this kit or that kit or using Lego or these fixed parts. You're saying that in RoboFest, you know, either you mine your garage or you go to the IC supply store and pick up all of these parts. You can use whatever you want. But yes, you can't have someone hiding behind a wall with a remote control.
Yes, correct. Well, the neat part is it's the innovation of the idea of what the robot can do. It's not just using the same idea year after year. It has to be a brand new idea on what a robot can do to help you. Mm-hmm. So for the gaming, there are certain tasks. You have to move aside things. You have to rescue people from this nuclear power that's going to explode. And you have to take these people in a gentle way and set them down in a certain area. Whereas the exhibition, you can take any idea, any platform, set it up, and you have to, as a team, be able to present it to the public, whether it's to judges or whether it's to mom and dad, whether it's to Tutu. It's got to be where you as a team, and of course, you know, some people always either they're hungry or have to use the bathroom. So you have to cover for each other. And that's really the fun part.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I'm I'm thinking, what would I dig out of my garage and build as a possible robot?
You want a robot lawnmower, right?
Well, you know, I'm thinking drones, but I just would, you know, go out and buy a drone. But I'm thinking, now these kids are young, they're elementary school, intermediate, and you know, this description of perhaps building something that might be suitable for a disaster or survival. What could be examples of what they might build? Because I'm, you know, My mind is still sort of whirling around trying to figure out what would I build.
Okay. Every year we have a theme, but in the past, some of my students, what they've done is they've built a robotic maid where the maid goes and the robot goes, finds a dirty spot, will actually mop it up, and then move on, find another dirty spot, and mop it up.
Okay.
Isn't that cool?
I like that idea. Yeah.
I've had other students who wanted a security bot. And so they had it where anyone coming close to either opening the door to their bedroom, and you know how sometimes brothers and sisters sneak into older brothers and sisters' room.
Absolutely.
So this robot will sense the door opening and will alert you inside. Or anybody wanting to grab your precious wallet or your watch, this robot will be the security bot.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know this this exhibition event is coming up, but it's a volunteer organization, and I know that there's an element that you need kind of participation to help you move forward, correct?
Yes. RoboFest, there's no one paid on the payroll for RoboFest. Everybody is a volunteer. And so our event is actually a regional qualifier. It's our 7th annual Hawaii RoboFest regional qualifier. It's Saturday, April 5th from 8:45 to 3 o'clock at UH West Oahu campus. Now, because everything is run by volunteers, if anyone is interested in seeing what our students can do, seeing the ideas that are come up, or just wanting to be around students and wanting to help, please, please, we welcome your extra hands and your hand.
Okay. And where's the best place to go to find all that that information?
You can either go to, well, I would say the best place is to email ISIS Hawaii, which is our island host.
Mm-hmm.
And the email is info@isishawaii.org, or you can call and speak to Lynn Fujioka at area code 808-988-1931.
And we'll put that on our show notes at bitemarkscafe.org.
Oh, excellent. Yep. Thank you so much.
Good. Thanks, Liz, for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And that's what's been happening this week. We'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be joined by Robbie Melton and Len Higashi to tell us what's new over at HTDC.
What are the key directives and new ideas coming with the new leadership? We'd, of course, love your suggestions as well as part of the conversation. You can give us a call at 941-3689 or toll-free from the Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689.
And, of course, this is live, and we're monitoring Twitter, so you can tweet us your questions at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
The long-standing upset over funding for charter school campuses looks like it may have a positive outcome this legislative session. A trio of bills is still very much alive. They'd give more authority to the Charter School Commission and more money to make their preferences reality. We'll get a status report from one of the architects of the bills, Senator Jill Takuda. We'll talk tomorrow morning at 8 on The Conversation.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Sim van der Rijn, author of Design for an Empathic World. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how we can reconnect to people, nature, and to ourselves.
Sunday morning at 11.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And joining us today is Robbie Melton and Len Higashi. Robbie recently joined HTDC as the new CEO and executive director. She was previously the director of entrepreneurial innovation for the Maryland Technology Development Corporation, or TEDCO.
Len, meanwhile, is the business development manager and was the interim executive director as the board sought to fill the top position.
And what are some of the top priorities for this new leadership? We'd love to hear your questions and comments. And, of course, that number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. Robbie and Len, we want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, we'll start off with the easy question. Robbie, how come Len is so handsome?
give me a break, Eric.
Well, you know, we had Len and Robbie on just a couple of weeks ago because we're talking about Entrepreneurial Day, right? And you guys were definitely involved with that. And but we wanted to have a chance to maybe get into a little bit more detail on what your thoughts are on the High Tech Development Corporation. Robbie, you're coming in. You've been on the job for about 5 weeks now, and previously over in Maryland. And I wanted to kind of get your impressions of, you know, how the scene looks to you in Hawaii. But maybe first off, Robbie, tell us a little bit about what you were doing in Maryland at the TEDCO.
Oh, yeah, TEDCO? I wore many hats. Mm-hmm. And we're a seed fund. TEDCO is a seed fund, so it's a little bit different. Similar, you know, name, but TEDCO is a seed fund. We gave $100,000. Well, we didn't really give. So it was an investment into companies for $100,000. First money in. Met a lot of guys in the garage, in the basement. And so I was manager of 35 portfolio companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mentored them, provided, you know, moral support, a shoulder to cry on. I also ran all the educational programs. So we ran a mega Entrepreneurs Day ourselves, but it was really meant for the entrepreneurs where they came in with lots of different programming mm-hmm. all day long. And then I did quarterly portfolio workshops. The main thing I did, too, which I think will lend a lot to HTDC, is I managed a program called the Rural Business Innovation Initiative, where we worked in all the rural areas of Maryland providing mentoring and special technical assistance projects to companies.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were talking about the $100,000 investment, was that something that as TEDCO, would you take an equity stake in the startups that you would invest in?
Yeah, it was actually a convertible note, but if we thought a company was going to make it big, then we converted it to equity, mm-hmm. and we've done that with a number of companies. But it's normally a convertible note with like 8% interest. And the good thing about it, our program, is you don't have to pay the note back until you start generating money. So as you know, a lot of tech companies, it takes them years to develop their product, especially biotech companies. So, you know, it worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of curious. I mean, you had a very long resume in Maryland doing very similar things to the HEDC. But the reason why I think one of the reasons why you were drawn back, I would imagine, is because you did start here. And in fact, you were doing work with the University of Hawaii some time ago. So not that we would be asking you for your life story, but I'm kind of curious about that path from Hawaii, what you were doing here to there, and what convinced you to return.
So I was here in Hawaii, living here, and I wanted to get my graduate degree. And it was very specialized. So I went to George Washington University, and I majored in science, technology, and public policy. Hmm. And then after the end of my degree, I decided I hated it and was not suited for it. So I came back to Hawaii, and I worked at UH in an international agricultural technology transfer project, which was fantastic because I got to meet scientists from all over the world. And the tech scene was really new here because this is, and I'm really dating myself by saying this, but it was in the mid to late 80s. And so the tech scene was new. We used to have these tech pizza parties, and there were like 20 of us that would show up every week, but we were the diehard tech people. And so just trying to get it rolling. And then when I wanted to move on, there just really wasn't anything to move on to here. So I left and thinking I was going to be gone for 2 years. Ended up being gone for 20. And so I just had this great career that I think really set me up for the path to come back.
Now, Len, I wanted to ask you. I mean, you were in the position for an interim basis and were looking for someone to take the helm. And I imagine you did cast a net as far and as wide as you could to find the right person. How did it come to Robbie being the right person?
Well, we're very fortunate. And I think the important part is not only does Robbie bring experience in technology, she does have the understanding of Hawaii culture. So when she comes back here, it's very easy to get working with her. And, I can share with her what's been done, and she can bring in the new ideas that she's been implementing in Maryland. So it's been a great partnership so far, and we're very, very fortunate to have recruited her.
Now, one of the things that we may be, I guess, guilty of in this little circle of ours is talking to kind of a confined community. And I'm curious, Robbie, from your perspective, do you think that HTDC or the High Tech Development Corporation needs to be more widely known? And of course, we all know it, and we've known it for many, many years. But what more do you think can be done in order to spread the word or build the knowledge of what HTDC is?
Yeah, I think a lot needs to be done, because when I called up my tech friends and said, "Oh, I'm applying for this job at HTDC," they're like, "Well, what's that?"
Okay, so when you said your tech friends, were your tech friends here in Hawaii?
Yes.
Wow. They need to listen to this show, too.
Yeah. I think they do. I really think they do.
They do listen, but they, well, okay, so yeah. we won't go there quite yet.
Yeah, so we won't go there quite yet. But so they said, "Well, what's that?" So I'm like, okay, we have our work cut out for us.
Right.
And even though there's so many good things that we're doing at HTDC, I think we need to cast a wider net to get more integrated. We have a lot of good programs like the High Growth Initiative, Innovate Hawaii. So people know those programs, but they don't really understand that underneath those programs is HTDC.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
We are going to be having a big marketing campaign
in the next few months that'll help us, you know, get our reach out there.
We're talking to Robbie Milton, the new CEO and Executive Director of the High Tech Development Corporation, and Len Higashi, the Business Development Manager over at the HTDC, about the future direction and vision for this organization. If you've got a question or a suggestion, if you'd like Robbie to come by and see what you're up to, you can give us a call here at 941-3689 or from the Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. We're also listening for you on Twitter. Now, Robbie, so 5 weeks on the job. You come here, you hit the ground running. You're basically doing the rounds. What are your initial impressions of that, the people that you've met and the community that you've seen here, which I would imagine is considerably more developed than it was in the mid-'80s?
Oh, definitely. I'm really excited because everyone is so enthused and passionate, and there's so many different things going on. We went to the Maker Fair this past weekend, which was really great to see all the kids really engaged in it, and just meeting, you know, a lot of different people that own co-working spaces, blue startups. So there is a lot going on, and it'd be great to more solidify everybody a little bit more to really build a stronger, cohesive community.
Well, you know, the one of the things that has happened over the course of the last couple of years is that, you know, there was a tech day at the Capitol, and instead of tech day, they did the entrepreneurial day. And that was kind of, I think, an interesting repackaging of technology, because I think there was a period where technology might have been viewed as somewhat them against us kind of a situation. But then, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs in the community, and tech is just, you know, one aspect of it. So that was kind of an interesting way of maybe rebranding and broadening, you know, the perspective of technology. Do you see kind of continuing down that path, or do you, and there's an, you know, there's another one that, you know, they're looking at Startup Paradise as another sort of branding a name. What's your thoughts on finding this sort of umbrella brand?
Yeah, I like the name Startup Paradise, but it's not just really a brand. It's really, you know, building something cohesive. Even within our own organization, I'd love to see our name changed to the Hawaii Technology Development Corporation instead of high tech, because I think the problem has been, you know, when you talk about tech, most people don't, the common person doesn't understand it. We all understand it, but they don't understand it, and they don't realize tech is involved in everything. From agriculture to the space, you know, and everything in between, fashion, movies, retail, everything has tech in it now.
Right. And I think when you said the not too many people understand it, I think a lot of us don't really know what really falls into the category of tech. We're talking to Robbie Milton, the new executive director and CEO of the High Tech Development Corporation, and Len Higashi, the business manager at HTDC. And we're talking about technology in Hawaii. If you have a question or comment, feel free to give us a call. Numbers 941-3689 on Oahu, or 1-877-941-3689 for the Neighbor Islands. We want to welcome Brian from East Oahu to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. How's it? Thanks so much for taking the call.
Sure.
So I've got some family members that are involved in a blue startup. In fact, they're one of the entrepreneurs that are working with Hank Rogers' team. They're at the stage now where they're getting some venture capital money, and they're beginning to move forward, leveraging Hawaii Angels and those kinds of things. What's the connection between your organization and, let's say, what Blue Startup is trying to do?
That's a great question.
Yeah, so actually, we're one of the programs that we have at HTDC is we run an incubator program, so that as companies are starting and once they finish Blue Startups, they're certainly welcome to come into our space. It's a lower cost space, plus you get a lot of services, continued mentoring, got a great staff like Len, who really helps out the company. So we do play together very well, and we all know each other. So that would be one avenue that HTDC would help the company.
So it sounds like you're describing kind of like the next stage, you know, if finding those other players and stuff after coming out of Blue Startups.
Right. And
if I can jump in here for a second.
Sure.
Just to paint picture a little bit of the past, a lot of what HTDC has been doing over the past couple of years is building an entrepreneurial community. And one of the efforts, you know, biggest efforts that we've been a part of is raising the awareness in the legislature of the passion and the energy building in Hawaii. And those efforts, I think, led to some of the funding which eventually led to the creation of Blue Startups.
Right, right.
So we do have a direct hand, although our name is not attached to the Blue Startup. We do have a direct hand, and we do consider ourselves part of the technology community here in Hawaii and innovation community here in Hawaii. And we certainly consider Blue Startups a family member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always sort of seen sort of this continuity of involvement from what you know you guys have been doing, Len, over at HTDC, as well as some of the things that Carl Fuchs has been doing, and sort of there's a strong kind of collaboration between both. And I think part of also the question might be leading us down the path of, and we've talked about this on the show too, is that Blue Startups was able to get some money from the legislature and match it with some private money, but that was a sort of a seed fund, an early stage investment. What really needs to get worked on now is what kind of funding mechanisms are in place going forward, post sort of that seed round, and that's where you know it becomes challenging because you have the venture capital investors and trying to nurture that kind of a community.
Sure. Just to speak a little bit in general about it, you know, Hawaii's got a lot of areas that we would like to grow. And I think for the innovation community, what we've been talking about is we don't need individual siloed programs. What we need is a comprehensive approach. And comprehensive, like to get technical, comprehensive economic development strategy.
Mm-hmm.
We need accelerators like Blue Startups, and there are a few that are coming online. We need follow-on funding. We need venture capital funding. We need incubation. There's all these pieces. You know, people talk about tax credits. They talk about grant programs. These are all pieces that help to build an entrepreneurial innovation community or an ecosystem, as we like to call it. And HTDC is playing an active role with our partners at Hawaii Strategic Development Corporation, Carl Fuchs Group, and working together with DBED, Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism. And I think all of our efforts are aligned, and I think that's a good thing, and that bodes well for the future of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Len, one of the key assets in the HTDC quiver, the key arrows, is that incubation piece that Robbie mentioned, and the Manoa Innovation Center being a facility, a place that can host some of these companies with lesser rent and certainly foster a community in that facility of collaboration and startups and thinking together and working together. But as we've covered on the show, from year to year, the lease on that space is running out from the University of Hawaii. And there's now a bill to try to find, to try to get specific funding to build a new or to have a new innovation center in Kaka'ako, I think, or at least that's one of the places that it's looking for. And there was just a hearing on that. What is the status on that initiative?
Thank you for asking. I mean, one of the most important things that HTDC has been doing this legislative session is we put a request in for CIP, Capital Improvement Project money, to build a new innovation hub. The status of it right now is it's still in the House draft of the budget. The Senate Ways and Means Committee just heard it. This is not a specific bill to start a new initiative. This is the budget bill that every year goes through,
right.
And it's a specific line item appropriation. We're very optimistic that you know we spent a lot of time educating people and asking people companies to testify on the importance of the bill. The facility not only is a resource for the innovation community, you know, for tech startups, it also provides program funding for HTDC, and without it, you know, HTDC wouldn't exist. So this is very important for us. It's something that we're working very hard on.
Yeah, in addition to, you know, funding some of our programs, we also fund other events and other tech programs, such as Entrepreneur Day. We also do Wetware Wednesdays. We also help with other people in their co-working spaces. So what we do is very important and vital to the community.
Well, you know, I would definitely agree with that. And I think one of the testament to the fact that people do know about the HTDC is the fact that I think you had something like 48 testimony during the House hearing, and then in this Ways and Means, it was up to like 56. So, you know, Len, I mean, you're right. There's a lot of people out there that are, and the call to action really, as far as I could see, was like an email that went to people, and they responded.
You know, I think that talks a lot about the growth and maturity of the innovation community here in Hawaii. People understand that it's very important to let legislators know and hear your voice, because without direct testimony or without taking the time to go there and educate them, they wouldn't know what benefit and they wouldn't understand. They would just hear from state people like us, mm-hmm. like Robbie and I, going in there and trying to tell them. So I think, you know, some of the growth that I've seen, you know, over the past few years is really this understanding. And this is from veterans like Bert and Ryan. And this is also from, you know, upstart young entrepreneurs joining the team. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who understand that it's important to tell your story and let your voice be heard.
And I think that one of the things that we've really been able to watch over the years with this radio show in particular is that evolution. And definitely just in the last 2 or 3 years with the Hawaii Innovation Initiative, mm-hmm. more and more people in my circle of friends go from, I don't know what's going on with politics, I don't understand what you're talking about, to, did you submit testimony? Mm-hmm. Did you? I mean, people much younger than me talking about that process and testifying. And mm-hmm. I think that evolution has been great. Robbie, I do want to talk a little bit more about incubation and facilities like that and some of your other plans for HDDC, but we're going to hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Robbie Melton and Len Higashi about the future of the HDDC.
And what can HDDC do for the tech sector that is new and innovative? Of course, we'd love to hear from you. And that number to call is 941-3689 from Oahu or from the neighbor islands at 1-877-941-3689. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi, Fred Child here from APM's Performance Today. In music, of course, timing is everything. Our friendly band of buskers at Hawaii Public Radio have this thing about timing, too. Remember when they said that by increasing the tempo of their 10-day pledge drive, they'd be able to perform it in 8 days? We all thought they were crazy, but they pulled it off. Now they're at it again with Plus One. The idea is that HPR members encourage one friend to join them in support of HPR, and that'll make Challenge 2014 shorter and sweeter than ever. I don't think they're crazy anymore. What do you think?
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa, and we're talking to Robbie Melton and Len Higashi about the creating a new high-tech development corporation.
And, you know, what can we do that we haven't already tried before? We'll find out. And, of course, you can be a part of that conversation. The number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Now, Robbie, one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, because, you know, you're new and you're coming in and you've got great ideas. And one of the maybe, and I might be mistaken about this, but, you know, I kind of saw HDDC as one of the major activities that they were doing was kind of maintaining the Manoa Innovation Center and the tenants that were in the MIC. And in a lot of ways, kind of playing the role of a, I don't know, landlord or management, you know, not property managed, but, you know, managing the companies that were there, managing the property that's there, managing the resources that presented itself via the Manoa Innovation Center. And that's, you know, that's kind of a lot of things to you know, balance given all this other activity that could be maybe spent some time on in terms of building the ecosystem. I wanted to maybe get, Robbie, your idea on, am I mistaken in the role that HD is playing, and how do you see it sort of evolving, you know, as we move forward?
Yeah, I would just say that we don't really manage the incubator per se. We're not facility managers. We're really a support team for the companies that are in the incubators. Mm-hmm. So our reason for having the incubation is really to mentor and grow these companies to be successful, sustainable companies in the state of Hawaii. And one of the reasons our CIP request is so important is that we've kind of outgrown our space in Manoa, and we'd like to modernize it to bring in some new tools that they have for incubation, We'd like to have, you know, an innovation lab where people can come in and really tinker and build prototypes. Also have some media room space where people can really try out the film and animation and really grow into a lot of other regions, biotech in particular, those types of things.
Well, it's good to know that, you know, that HTDC isn't burning cycles, collecting rent checks and chasing people around and dealing with janitorial staff. But I did kind of want to more broadly say or ask your thoughts on this. You know, when you say Manoa Innovation Center, there's kind of a vibe that comes with Manoa. You know, the university is up there. There's research and such, agriculture. But when the initiative started and started looking at a spot in Kaka'ako, to me, it was almost it made sense because of the energy that's happening there and the types of things that are happening there, the creativity that's happening there. And do you see that as part of an overall shift in tone that you'd like to foster at the HEDC from moving basically to kind of the Kaka'ako level of energy and creativity?
I don't know if I would call it a shift in tone, but by being a Kaka'ako, as you know, there is a great energy there because there's so many things tech happening in Kaka'ako, and there's the big, you know, urban, you know, vibe with the young people, you know, walkability, you know, the live, work, play kind of mantra there. And we see us fitting into that very nicely because it's not really about entrepreneurship or startup businesses. It's about innovation. And innovation happens in so many different areas, not just in, you know, building these tech companies.
Well, you know, I actually kind of see it as a great opportunity to reboot and redefine. And, you know, if you're looking for a new place, I mean, with the bill that's in place, this is a great opportunity to kind of redefine yourself. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is, you know, in prior history, there have been a number of attempts to represent the tech community. And because it's so difficult to do so, you know, there's software, there's biotech, there's things like, manufacturing or dual use kinds of activities. You know, there's a variety of different, even space technologies, right? So when we try to represent the tech community, there have been attempts like the HTTA, Hawaii Tech Something Association. There was the Hawaii Science and Technology Council, which was another aggregation of tech community companies. Do you think there's still a necessity to have a representative body trying to sort of speak for the tech community?
I don't think you can really do that. I think it's important for people to partner and build a community and a whole ecosystem. But the needs of the biotech industry are very different from the needs of the software people, which are very different from the needs of the space or the agriculture. So, you know, everybody has different needs. Their growth periods are very different. Mm-hmm. Like biotech, you're talking 8 to 10 years if you're doing any kind of therapy. So, you know, anybody who's building a product, you know, has a very different timeline from that. But I think we need to have a community where everybody can join forces and say we are a large part of the Hawaii economy.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Robbie Melton and Len Higashi about the future of the High Tech Development Corporation. And if you've got ideas or a thought, you can give us a call at 941-3689 or from the Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. We can also catch your comments on Twitter. Now, Robbie, you spoke about many of the things that you had done in Maryland and some of the ideas. I can imagine as you've been touring around for 5 weeks, you must have seen something that you know you can do that can happen here. So I'm kind of curious about maybe one of your first initiatives, you know, the first 100 days of your administration. What can we see that you might be proposing?
Yeah, so there are a number of things that I would like to bring to Hawaii. One of them, which the general public probably wouldn't see, is bringing metrics to show the success and the impact that the tech community has in the state of Hawaii. So that's one thing. But the other thing, too, is, you know, as we talked earlier about how tech is sort of mysterious to the common person. So I'm thinking maybe we need to start in agriculture because there's a lot of tech in agriculture that people don't know about. And once you can show the success of that, then people go, oh, I see that, and then move on to other industries. The one goal I have that I'd love to see is increase the number of SBIR award winners. Because currently, you know, we have a number of companies receiving SBI awards, but I think it could be bigger.
So SBIR, Small Business Innovation Research
Grants, yes.
And these are federal grants, and I know HDDC administers sort of the grant program. What is it that the companies can look for in terms of trying to get an SBIR grant?
So there's 13 different federal agencies that have SBIR grants. And the good thing about it is they are grants.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're developing a new product, you know, that involves research and development, these grants are open to any company. And since I've been working with them for a number of years, I can help facilitate, you know, companies getting additional grants.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lynn, I mean, you guys have been involved with SBIR in previous years. Do you have a sense as to, like, how many companies locally have been sort of run through the SBIR program?
Yeah, I mean, we have, you know, just to give you a specific idea, last year our state matching grant program awarded 18 different companies state matching grant for their federal award.
Mm-hmm.
Through the years, there have been a number of players that have had their ups and downs. I think one of the things Robbie has been very vocal about that we're looking forward to is commercializing some of these projects and getting them to the next level. It's something that, you know, maybe some of the companies on the mainland have done better than the companies in Hawaii. And I think these are opportunities that we've been pushing, you know, concepts that we've been pushing. We look forward to doing a lot more this year.
Now, Robbie, I'm kind of curious about metrics, you know, ways to measure success. And I would say that would be very important, especially when you are, you know, starting in your role to demonstrate progress. I know that even on our show, it might have been a Hawaii Science and Technology Council report that was kind of this mm-hmm, comprehensive, mm-hmm, how many jobs does tech create and how many industries does it cover? I think DBED also does some specialized reporting. But for you, especially with your experience, what would you put on that dashboard? What would you say are the measures that we need to put in place to have a better idea of how well we're doing in tech?
So one of the things that we did at TEDCO is we measured how much money was brought into the state that these companies were generating, either through SBIR grants, government contracts, other investments. Those are really critical. So like in TEDCO, for every dollar we spent, I think it was like $400 in return. So there's a huge measure of success. Jobs is really hard. Everybody wants to see jobs created. Mm-hmm. But jobs are created by so many different factors. It's really hard to say, well, the tech, you know, this program created X number of jobs. And that's a harder, but that's the one that everybody wants to see.
Well, you know, I like that discussion about the metrics, because you kind of alluded to the fact that not too many people might see this, but, you know, being a couple of open data wonks, we like to maybe see that this data becomes more easily accessible. And Len, to your point, you know, if you start to create a metrics and try to identify successes. I mean, one of the things that I would be interested in is just as an SBIR kind of historical, how many companies have gone through SBIR? What were some of the investments that went into those companies, and where kind of are they in 2014? And just as a public database that would be easily accessible, we could sort of get a sense as to how it's successful. And maybe through just the transparency, there could be some ideas on how to leverage, you know, some of those companies for commercial applications.
So right now we're in the process of doing a survey mm-hmm. to really gather those kind of metrics from our SBIR award winners. And then, of course, we would post that kind of information on our website so that everybody would see our metrics, because I think it's important to show the success of our companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Robbie, in addition to doing this outreach and being more visible, I like the idea of becoming the Hawaii Tech Development Corporation versus the High Tech Development Corporation. Bert and I have organized events that HDDC has supported. I'm also curious about is your view on the more grassroots level of the tech industry. Certainly, we're talking about investments and venture funding, but there are the one individual entrepreneurs, there are the students trying to do something different and very small projects, maybe not job creation, but but more fostering that creativity and that ambition. What's your thoughts on that level of the tech industry in Hawaii?
I think it's very important to the economy and also to generate more innovation. I think, a lot of times people look down on these little mom and pop innovators, but they're critical to the economy because their innovation fosters other innovation, and that just sort of spirals. So, you never really know who's doing what. So one of my favorite companies in Maryland was this guy. He was a faculty member at University of Maryland, and he did some kind of engineering, and he splits atoms. And he's bootstrapped his company, and he sells this device that looks like something out of science fiction for $265,000 a piece, and he sells them. Yeah, many of them, and it's all bootstrapped.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So who are we to poo-poo, these little grassroots efforts that you just never know where they're going to end up?
So as far as I know right now, probably a lot of your time and Lynn's time is involved with the legislative session. I mean, I know that can take hours out of your day. But when it's over, let's say in May, what is it you think that you will start to really put some energy into? And like Ryan was saying, in terms of the first 100 days, what would you want to see your sort of hang your hat on? And how can we, as sort of the community of tech supporters and evangelists, how could we help you?
So one of the things I'd really like to do once the session is over is really visit the neighbor islands, really get to have an understanding of what's going on in the local communities, because I think, everybody thinks of everything tech in the urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of stuff going on out in the outer reaches that, sometimes we don't even know about. But just getting familiar with those communities, and it'd be great to put in a program similar to what we had in Maryland, where you have people on the ground. Right now, we're very short-staffed. But, having people on the ground that can really be active on the other islands.
Well, yeah. I would be kind of curious, given the fact that there are sort of economic boards on each of the neighbor islands, like let's say on Maui, there's MEDB. How would you be relating to them if they're on Maui and you're going over there and sort of in their marketplace?
Well, no, because it's collaboration. Because it's showing them that there's an economy there. When we started our program in Maryland, none of the EDs paid any attention to us. They were like, there's no tech here. So they didn't have even companies to refer us to.
Mm-hmm.
So we dug down deep, and we found some really amazing tech companies in their backyard that they didn't even know existed. Well, and then once we could show that there was a program, then we started getting more traction.
Yeah, and I think it's about that discovery that interesting things are happening. I would say agriculture, your background, and on the neighbor islands, you would see that, MEDB, Kauai Makers, Hawaii Tech Works on the Big Island. I think that I'd like to hear more about your explorations on the neighbor islands. But if anybody wants to keep track of your initiatives, the events that you're doing, the legislation that you're supporting, where can they go to find more information?
On our website, htdc.org.
And how can they get on your mailing list so they can send in testimony on the next round of hearings?
You can direct that to me, len@htdc.org, or if you are inclined, testimony@htdc.org.
Fantastic.
Sounds good. Robbie Milton is the new CEO of the High Tech Development Corporation, and Len Higashi is the Business Development Manager. And we want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
It was great.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
It was. And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll go behind the scenes at the recent Mini Maker Faire.
And of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, email us at feedback@bitemarkscafe.org.
Or you can find us on Twitter. Bert is Bite Marks, and I'm at Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chong, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And we leave you with our song pick of the week. Here's a band called Kit the Klain and a song called Running Circles. See you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.